This is the My Natural Beat podcast, episode number 35. I am Cookie, your host. The My Natural Beat podcast inspires and encourages exploration of the world and of your mind, body, and spirit, whilst celebrating and connecting strong, courageous individuals full of moxie from around the world, one conversation at a time. Today we welcome Jacques Briem, who is a safari guide and wildlife photographer. We recently caught up with Jacques a few months ago when he was in the Grimeti Reserve in the Serengeti ecosystem in Tanzania. You can even hear some crickets if you're a careful listener. He was there for 3 months, but is normally based in the Sabisand Game Reserve in South Africa, which is located just outside of Kruger National Park. Our conversation is a thoughtful one that will hopefully provoke you to think about your interests and enthusiasm in finding more ways to follow them. We learn how, despite his studies and ultimately becoming a graduate of economics, he followed his interest and enthusiasm, which has led him to exactly where he is today. Sometimes we all need reminders or little nudges to remind us, to help us remember what we did not know we had forgotten. And for Jacques, it was the experience in nature with animals. As a boy, he had lived in South Africa for a few years and always had an appreciation for it, as well as a fascination with the natural world. This episode has advice for those who are going on a safari for the first time, as well as a few words about how to unmute your senses. We learn about the change in perspective he had when he went from living in a busy, bustling city like Madrid to a nature reserve in South Africa, and how he tunes in daily to watch the sunset during what is called a sundowner. May his easygoing attitude and kind approach towards life inspire you to follow your interest and your enthusiasm, as well as continuing to practice unmuting your senses each day. And of course, may it give you insight into what it might be like to be a safari guide. This episode was recorded via internet, so please bear with us for any sound, jumps in sound, and there were lots of drops during this conversation, so it's seamless. I think it's pretty seamless. But yes, I hope you'll enjoy it. Before we get to the show, I would like to give a big thanks to the guys in the band Nonstop out of Boulder, Colorado. I would like to thank you guys for letting me use your music. The song is called Instant Gratification. If you're listening to the podcast via Facebook, check out their Facebook page. That's capital N-A apostrophe A-N space stop Facebook page. If you're listening online, check out their website, www.naanstopmusic.com. And if you're listening via iTunes, check them out at capital N-A apostrophe A-N space stop. So with that, let's get to the show. Welcome on.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks.
You know, which town and country are you in today?
So at the moment, I'm actually in the Grimeti Reserve, which is in the Serengeti ecosystem in Tanzania.
Okay.
But I'm usually based in the Sabisand Game Reserve in South Africa.
Okay.
That's just outside of Kruger National Park.
How long will you be there?
So I've now been here for about 3 weeks, and
mm-hmm.
I'll be here in total 3 months. So yeah, it's a good amount of time, and I'm sure it'll allow me to really explore this place.
Cool. What is your favorite part about where you are?
It's actually quite different from South Africa. So the landscapes are much more, say, vast and open, a lot more grasslands, whereas where I am in South Africa, it's more densely vegetated, and you don't get the same sense of vastness, but they're both, equally incredible. It's just very different.
Right. Your favorite part perhaps could be the difference, or just the vastness, or?
Yeah, I think the difference, there's a lot of things that are foreign to me here. At the moment, I'm still learning a lot, and there's different bird species, even mammals that I've never seen before that are, it's kind of awakened a new kind of desire to learn more about the natural world over here.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about who you are and how you're spending your time.
Yeah, I'm actually originally French and American, but always had an appreciation for Africa and specifically South Africa. I'm a safari guide or a field guide, photographic safari guide, many different terms. Some people even call it game ranger, but in essence, what it involves is taking guests that come to these parts of Africa on tours and showing them the natural world that we have around here, mm-hmm. Introducing them to the wildlife, to everything from birds, mammals, reptiles, plants, trying to link things together, just really giving them an overview of the beauty of nature. And my day-to-day is the days are quite long for me, so usually we wake up just before sunrise even, so we're up when the stars are still out, and we're getting things ready to then be able to meet guests just in time for sunrise. And then we head out usually on a game drive, that's a vehicle-based safari basically, mm-hmm. and we spend about anywhere from like 3 to 5 or 6 hours out looking for animals of all sorts. Obviously if they have preferences or favorites or things that they specifically want to see, we'll focus on that, but otherwise we just go out there and see what nature offers. And then we're back in time for a breakfast or a lunch, and then we go usually again noon. So we try to time our activities. The wildlife is the most active, mm-hmm. and so we leave right around just like 4 p.m. or so, and we get back just after dark as well. So, and then depending on the situation, sometimes we'll host dinners with the guests, and the day can go literally from like 5 in the morning or earlier to 10 p.m. at night at times or later. So long hours, but a great career, and just a very unique and rewarding career in many ways.
I'm so impressed. I mean, we met each other when we were studying at university in Spain. And right. You studied economics. I don't think we ever had a class together.
No, we didn't, actually. I don't think so.
But we crossed paths in the computer lab quite often. I'm not surprised that this is what you're doing, but I never really knew that this was an interest of yours. So maybe if you could you kind of just, how was it always something that you wanted to do?
It's something that naturally developed, I guess, but always being interested in the natural world and always enjoyed being outdoors. Didn't think I'd make my career in this kind of a field. I thought maybe I'd go for a more common corporate, even though my childhood dream was to. But I think I was actually looking for something to do throughout the summer months of the university holiday, and found a tube.
Oh, it's cut out a little bit.
To it, and really, really enjoyed it. It was kind of a tough time because it was right in the middle of my university degree. So I was now studying economics, but I knew I wanted to do something different. So I just continued with the economics, got my degree, and then as soon as I finished, I came back to South Africa, did some more training to be a guide, and then just started working. I haven't looked back from there.
Now, it cut out a little bit when you said what your childhood dream is, or what it was.
Growing up, I wanted to be a veterinarian.
Okay.
But I guess the amount of studies involved maybe put me off a little bit.
Right. And so then you were saying in the summer months, you did a program, and then you really got hooked onto it.
Exactly that. I did a short course that introduced me to it, gave me the foundations, and really inspired me to take a different course or different life path. As soon as I finished and graduated, I came back and did more training. It was longer, more intensive training, and more in-depth training afterwards. So.
Yeah, it's so exciting. It's so exciting to hear that a seed was planted. You've always kind of been wanting to work with animals or the natural world, and then a summer course just kind of turned that light on, sort of, I guess you could say.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I it was just something where, as a kid, I actually lived in South Africa for about 6.5-7 years or so. I had the chance to go on safari with my family, and I knew that I loved it, but never did I think that I would one day be the person in charge of the safari vehicle and leading these tours. So.
Yeah,
it's been a great kind of development.
Yeah, and what has been the most difficult thing in not going the, I guess, more corporate route, as you stated?
Because it's such a different career, especially in South Africa, it seems like a lot of people don't necessarily consider it to be a real job, but I guess a real is still to be defined, right? So, but to me, it seems very real. And as much as there could be kind of social pressures to do something that may be more, let's say, standard, it is a career that, you get from it as much as you put into it. And I like that aspect of knowing that you can really make it to be what you want it to be.
Right. And are there any sort of, I guess this is more specific to the tours that you offer, But is there any sort of specific things that you guys are doing that, I don't know, promote, can we say, sustainability?
Right. I mean, already just in the choice of where I'm working with a company called Singita. They really, they do all they can to run their lodges in a way that's sustainable, that uplifts the local communities around these areas, and also that they seek to secure large areas of African wilderness to preserve. They're really focused on community conservation and sustainability, and a lot of their camps are run with solar power. They've really looked at how to make things in line with the offering, basically.
Right. And is there anything that you would, if somebody has never gone on a safari, what what would you tell them before they go, before they pack up?
Just to get excited, really. I mean, there's so much to get excited for, really. Yeah. I mean, first-timers, we get a lot of first-timers, actually, that come on safari. And in a way, it makes me as a guide who's seen a lot of the things that they're seeing for the first time numerous times. It mm-hmm. makes me appreciate those things again and again and again. But it also reminds me of my first time, you know, because when you've seen something multiple times, you almost get over it.
Right.
That must have been how I was back in the day, you know?
Yeah. So neat that you're following your interests and your enthusiasm. And
I mean, we get to see some incredible things. We work in areas usually that are very, how to say it, some of the best areas for viewing wildlife in the world. And yeah, I mean, on a daily basis, we can expect to see all sorts of antelope and a huge diversity of birds. If we're lucky, we'll get to see some of the predators like lions and leopards, potentially cheetahs, hyenas, yeah, elephants and rhinos in South Africa, especially giraffes, zebras. I mean, yeah, the list is endless and the diversity is quite astonishing.
In your work, you do photography as well.
Right. Yeah. So I love photography. I go pretty much every day out with my camera, and I mean, we're presented with so many opportunities, it's tough to not take a photo. But I've also found that photography, it's not only a great way to remember some of the things that I've experienced, but also to share it with other people. And also, I mean, we get a lot of guests that come and they also want to get some great shots to take home. Some people will make coffee table books, or they'll just make cards or things like that to send to the family and friends. And so being able to understand photography enough to be able to then help the guests, it's been really helpful in my career, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, you have quite a collection, I saw.
Yeah, I've uploaded a lot on my website, and I actually just started getting into the whole social media stuff again because I had put that on pause for a few months. But
yeah,
I realized just how much people are appreciative of some of the content that I've been posting. And I mean, I realize as well that a lot of these people that are on the internet and on social media are nowhere near anything like any place like where I am. So
right.
Just sharing some of this with them, I think, is eye-opening and inspiring for many people.
Oh, definitely. It's an insight into your day-to-day, but mm-hmm. which seems so normal, right, to you.
Exactly, yeah.
At this point, I think we'll pivot a little bit. As I told you, the theme of the podcast is Natural Beat,
right.
Which is kind of this, you know, what you do to make sure that you're showing up best for your tours and feeling good and energized all day, these sort of things. We get into a little bit of, we just get to know you a little bit better. So the first question in this series of questions is how do you explore the world? And I have to preface that question, it's kind of silly, because I feel like sometimes you spend so much time outside in the natural world, you know, so.
Most of it is in a vehicle, but one of the better ways is to explore it on foot, actually. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different experience, and it awakens your senses in ways that a vehicle doesn't have the ability to do. When you're on foot, you become a participant in nature, whereas when you're in a vehicle, you're merely an observer. And so just that shift makes your senses come alive. I mean, you're always listening out for a potential noise that would indicate some kind of danger or something to look out for. You're using your sense of smell, even like touching things as you go and whatnot. It's a high quality experience that if anybody's coming on safari, we mostly explore these wilderness areas from a vehicle, but because animals tend to trust the vehicles a bit more than people on foot because of a very long history of hunting, they view it as a threat. They view people on foot as a threat. Usually they'll run away. So when you're on a vehicle, you can get closer. But one of the ways that I definitely prefer to explore the natural world here is on foot.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you really awaken a lot of your senses. You're in tune with your surroundings. You become a participant in nature rather than just a mere observer. And I mean, you really, we try to use as many of our senses as possible when we're out on foot, whether it's listening to bird calls or anything very subtle out there, different things, whether it's the smoothness of a rock, we call a rubbing post, where animals have scratched themselves over time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these kinds of experiences are of a high quality, and it's definitely, walking safaris are definitely something that I recommend to anybody coming to Africa on a safari.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so exploring by foot is the way that you feel most connected, right?
Right, exactly that, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have any distractions that hinder your, let's say, absorption of the natural world. So there's no engine noises, there's no structure around you. It's just you and nature.
Right. Have you found that, not your quality of life, but the way that, you know, from living in a big city such as Madrid to, you know, moving to the field like that, have you found that it's had an impact on your life in general? The way you deal with stress, or has it... East?
Yeah, I think sorry, it's just the internet connection out here in these wilderness areas sometimes can be a bit touch and go.
It's totally fine, we're making it work.
All right, but yeah, I think out here obviously the stress is of a very different nature, and I mean, I guess our biggest concern is that we have guests that are happy and remain happy.
Mm.
And not just that, but they're really they're overwhelmed with emotions, and they feel like they're kind of on a high, and that's our biggest worry. So I think knowing that, often the natural world provides, but in any case, as a guide, I think we're always capable of creating an experience, even if, let's say, we don't get to see many animals on drive or whatnot.
The way that you deal with stress is different from the city when you lived in a city versus now when you live
close
to nature.
I think out here there's always a possibility to find a quiet spot, and if ever you are stressed in any way, you can easily disconnect even more than how we are disconnected already, and just go find a spot, sit down, listen to the sounds, take it all in, and just relax your mind and hopefully get rid of your worries.
Yeah. Along those lines, my next question is, how do you explore your mind?
You know, I think, especially here, nature often pushes your limits in a way where I think after you've reached a certain amount of experience and you've been out here a certain amount of time, you no longer want to know what is that or where does it occur or anything like that. You start asking a lot more why questions.
Mm-hmm.
And the why questions are the ones that often will make your mind just go places. And I mean, just this morning even, I was discussing with a guest that departed, like, obviously the big themes, the concept of our place in the universe and whatnot, and just how, yeah, every being out here, I mean, we were chatting about a chameleon, a flat-necked chameleon, and just how well created they are.
Mm-hmm.
For what they do, you know, they blend in perfectly with their environment, and yeah, they just, the way that they have been designed allows them to thrive in an environment that can be quite harsh with a lot of predators and other threats.
Mm-hmm. So maybe an exploration of more why questions and exploring.
Yeah, definitely the why questions are the ones that take me further, for sure.
And
a lot of them don't have answers, and I think that's the neat thing, is that your mind keeps spinning. You start theorizing, you start asking other people, and you still never know exactly what the answer is at the end of it. But I guess you feel inspired even with no answer at the end.
Right. And so it's also fun to explore your minds with other people in that regard.
For sure. I mean, the guiding team, so I'm part of a guiding team, well over 10. And yeah, just everybody's got very similar interests. And often when you start asking those why questions, you'll start to gain insights based on their experience, and every single guide has obviously had different experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that allows you to develop your theories, I guess, to answer those why questions a bit better. But yeah, still, often you'll find that there's no answers to some of these tough why questions.
Right. And do you practice any sort of relaxation techniques, or it sounds... But it sounds like your stress level is not as high as it would be if you were somewhere else. It sounds like it's a quite manageable.
Right. I think it definitely is. I mean, I think your worries come in a different form here, but I think just that ability to spend so much time in nature is hugely peaceful. It definitely removes a lot of stress. I mean, I know I've had days where I've had external factors that have influenced my stress levels, and unfortunately I've had some seriously stressful days. But then the moment you get out there and you're on drive, you're with your guests, and you're having a good time in nature, yeah, a lot of those feelings of stress just kind of dissipate.
Right. The next question is, how do you explore your body?
I think, like I said earlier, just being on foot, whether it's actually leading a walking safari or just wandering around, I think using the senses here is remarkable. I mean, there's never any pure silence. There's never any neutral smell. There's always something. And I think our senses as humans are very well developed, but we've muted a lot of them in a way, because our prime senses obviously are sight. And especially in cities, if you're just wandering through, you don't think to listen to necessarily the traffic that's driving past you or whatnot, mm-hmm. because you've muted that. You don't want to listen to that. Whereas here, you realize that no matter how hard you try, you cannot. There's no such thing as silence. You're always kind of exploring your body through the sounds and the smells and everything else.
I don't know too much. I've been to South Africa very briefly, but I haven't spent any time in where you are. But how is the climate? Is it pretty much the same year-round? Does it change?
So I'm a bit more familiar with the South African climate, especially in the Kruger areas. Here in Tanzania, since I've been here, it's been pretty mild, I'd say. Some rain, but otherwise the temperatures have been good. But South Africa, yeah, it changes quite a lot. So our summer months are the Northern Hemisphere's winter months, and everything's pretty much inverse, let's say.
Right.
But the winter mornings can be really, really cold, and the evening can be cold, especially when you're out on a vehicle that's an open vehicle, and so there's just that wind constantly blowing. But then the middays are really nice, and then the summer months are very warm, and that coincides with our rainy season as well.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes you'll see temperatures of well over 43 degrees Celsius easily, 45 degrees even.
Wow.
And it's humid as well. Yeah, I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit, but it's very, very, very hot. Warm in the summer. Yeah.
It's like really hot.
But then again, that's also why for the safari specifically, we will always try to focus our safaris around the time where the temperatures are fine. So it's early mornings, late afternoons, and that's usually also when the animals are most active.
Right. My next question is, how do you explore your spirit?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I'm not religious in any way, but definitely there is always an energy that you can sense out here. And I think a lot of it, again, goes back to those why questions in a way. You know, the more you keep asking those questions, the more you start going into these really big questions, and some that can be at times scary. By just continuing to ask those why questions, one of the ways in which I explore my spirit.
Yeah, those why questions are pretty big, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. Have you noticed, based on your experience in South Africa doing this type of work, but how the global effect of weather patterns and things, have you noticed it, and have the animals?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a few, since I've been guiding, we actually had a few years of drought, and then we've had good rains as well. So I can't say I've seen a trend in any way.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are always these natural cycles where there's years of drought and then years of flood and whatnot. But yeah, animals obviously are affected by it hugely at times. I mean, some animals more so than others. Some animals do very well when there's harsh conditions. They're well adapted for that. For example, a very common antelope that we get here is an impala. They're what we call mixed feeders. So they'll feed on leaves as well as grasses. And so when the times get tough, they're able to alternate their diet to be able to thrive in those tough conditions. Things like hippos, I remember when I was guiding a few years back, we had a pretty severe drought. It was 2 years in a row of drought. A lot of the hippo population was basically weakened to the point that a lot were either starving and dying or being killed by predators, especially lions.
Oh, animals are quite adaptive as well.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah.
Just moving forward, do you have any current, besides your photography and the groups that you're leading, the safaris that you're leading, do you have any other really cool experiences or projects on the horizon that we can be on the lookout?
So, I'm working still on my website, Wild About the Wild. I'm not sure where I'll end up taking it, but at the moment I'm trying to develop a following. I'm trying to inspire people to appreciate the natural world by sharing a lot of the photography and some fun facts and just an insight into my life here. And hopefully it'll get people to make the decision to come and visit, because at the end of the day, it's really tough to accurately illustrate or describe the experience. I think most people, once they've been on safari, they come back again and again and again. But until they've been, they'll never know what it's really about, no matter how many documentaries they watch or how many images or how much reading they do. It's one of those things you need to experience it to actually appreciate it.
Yeah, and if someone was just starting out doing what you're doing, you know, they're going to do the summer course, what would you advise them? Or do you have any advice for somebody who wants to go in this path, or is just...
I think that the most important thing as a guide is really just to keep asking questions and don't be afraid of not knowing the answer, but rather just keep asking, and the more they get into it, the more they'll know. And a lot of self-study is important as well. I mean, there's a lot of resources in the form of books and whatnot, but often the best way to learn is actually just to get out there with a pair of binoculars and just observe and, yeah, make observations based on that. Hopefully come to some kind of conclusions, but that's definitely one of the better ways of learning out here.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe you've been asked this question before, and if you don't know, it doesn't, it's no problem. If you were an animal, do you know which one you would be?
It's a good question, and I actually, it's a question that guests sometimes ask me, but I think I'd go for an elephant. Elephants are very long-lived, and they don't really have to worry too much about predators. I also like the fact that they're usually in family structures, and so there's always that kind of safety or security that comes with the unit of a herd.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think they enjoy a good swim from time to time. They instill a lot of respect. Obviously, fascinating animals in many ways. If I had to choose which one to be, I think I'd be an elephant.
Okay, cool. You're good on your feet.
Thanks. And, you have to be in this industry. It's a career that's as much about people as it is about nature and wildlife. I mean, it's probably even more so about people. We literally spend about half of the day with people that we have never met before.
Right.
And we get them to trust us and to guide them through this wilderness area that's completely foreign to them. So it's all about communicating in a way that makes them feel comfortable, number one, but also, two, you want to get them to learn and appreciate the things that you're exposed to.
Right. Plus, you have experience living both in a city and now in the field. What do you think someone could do if they wanted to bring more of the natural world, or experience more of the natural world from wherever they are in the world?
It can be really tough in many ways, but like I said earlier about people muting their senses and really just depending on their eyesight. I mean, I actually recently spent 5 months in the U.S. and I was doing regular walks around the neighborhood with my dog. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a lot of wildlife around in the form of birds and squirrels and other people's pets and whatnot. And I think if I had to ask people in that neighborhood if they knew what the call of a cardinal was, or the call of a jay, or any one of those birds, they probably wouldn't know. And so I think it's best to start small and appreciate everything around you, and stop and listen and learn and observe what's around you. Don't try to unmute those senses that you, as a city dweller, have muted to be able to focus on your daily goals, because that's in essence the reason why people mute their senses, is so that they can focus on whether it's commuting, they can focus on getting to their destination or anything of that sort. They need to unmute those senses and appreciate the journey along the way.
Oh my, I really like that. Unmute those senses.
Mm-hmm.
It's so simple, but something that I think we can always check in with and see how we're muting or how we're just not here, right? Not completely present.
For sure. I mean, if you do the same thing that you do every day and do it tomorrow and think, okay, well, what am I missing out on? What is it that I'm hearing or smelling or seeing that I didn't hear, smell, or see yesterday. I think there's a lot there. And yeah, I mean, people just don't realize it because they're so focused on the goals and reaching those goals.
Yeah, I really like that. Thank you for sharing that with us, that perspective.
No, that's great. Pleasure.
I unmuted my senses today a little bit. I went swimming in pretty cold water.
Oh, really?
Kind of like a good distance, right? And as I was doing it, I mean, you have to be quite, you know, present. And I was the only one kind of like swimming from the distance, you know, from one side to the other. And on one hand, I thought, am I doing something stupid? Like, why am I the only one? But, you know, but then I realized, no, right. Everyone can do what they like, and right now I'm just the one swimming in the middle. So
yeah, well, good on you for doing that.
Yeah. Kind of rounding it out at the end, are you reading anything right now, or do you really have time to
read? So I do read, but I'm not reading longer books per se, but I like short articles. And yeah, just anything that's of interest, I guess I'll read. Often I'll do a lot of research, actually, because going back to the guest perspective, if there's any question that we get asked that we don't know the answer to, I mean, that's always the best opportunity to learn. And so, yeah, I often do just specific research based on questions that maybe I answered, but I didn't answer in a way that I found satisfactory, or right. Maybe I just didn't know the answer. And then, yeah, I think those moments of research are, I mean, that's basically what I read daily, is a lot of that stuff.
Yeah. At the end of each conversation, I always like to ask my guests to share their favorite go-to habit, activity, behavior that, if not always, almost always leaves them feeling in their natural beat.
Yeah, it's a bit of a tough one in a way, but I think one of the things that's actually part of our jobs that I enjoy most is what we call sundowners. So basically, at around sunset time, we'll find a nice spot and we'll park the vehicle and we'll grab a drink from the cooler box and we'll just, yeah, watch the day come to an end, sometimes reflect on things that we've seen. So I think that's definitely one of the moments of the day that I tend to prefer. It's also a great way for us to really connect with some of our guests and get them more and get to know them more, and also get to know what they want to see or do over the next few days of their visit, I guess. So yeah, I enjoy the sundowners. I guess the colors, the combination of the colors and the cooling temperatures, and just also a lot of birds are calling at that time. I think there's a lot of peace and reflection that takes place there.
Cool. So the sundowners, when you go and take time to watch the sunset all together with your guests.
Yeah, exactly. Or alone. I mean, I guess it's just that moment at sunset. The colors here in these wilderness areas of Africa are unbelievable. All these like vivid reds and oranges and pinks and purples. I mean, unbelievable colors in the sunset here.
Yeah. What time is the sun setting nowadays?
Here in Tanzania, it's right around 6:30 at the moment.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. Cool.
It's quite early compared to the rest of the world, I'd say.
Yeah. Yeah. We have it now, the sun out until maybe 10 at night, 10:30.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally wild.
I'm in bed by that time.
Yeah. I should be in. So, yes, do you have any last words or quote or just anything that you haven't had a chance to say?
I guess, yeah, one thing is just for anybody that's listening to this, just really, if you have never been on safari before, definitely it's a trip to do at least once in your lifetime. And often we'll see first timers that come and they'll fall in love with it and they'll come every year after that. So it just shows how special a safari experience can be. And yeah, like I say, if you haven't done it before, you have to do it.
Yeah.
And do it soon.
Do it soon. It's probably the best way to have a safari is to be led by you.
No, thanks. That'd be great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
we're meeting people from all over. So wherever your listeners may come from, be happy to welcome them and share this space with them.
Right. And that can be done in both, all three, right? French, Spanish, English.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. All three languages. Although I guess of the three, French and English are my strongest, but definitely can communicate well enough in Spanish to create a good safari experience.
Right. Where did the majority of your guests come from?
The majority are usually Americans.
Okay.
But we also get a fair amount of Europeans, and more coming from Asia as well. So,
okay.
Yeah, but all over, really. I mean, we get guests from all over. And that's what's great about it as well. I mean, even for us guides, without traveling, we get to experience the world through the people of the world. And so we're introduced to their languages, their culture. And, I mean, because we're spending such significant amounts of time with them, I mean, you get past the whole superficial, how are you, how's it going? It's more, you get to actually develop conversations and follow up. So, it's a great way for us to explore the world.
Yeah, and I didn't ask, but how is traditional food prepared, you know, for the breakfast and lunch and dinner, or what kind of fare is it?
Where I'm working now is remarkable. So the Singita, they've got some of the best chefs in Africa, possibly the world, I'm sure, here. So they create some of the best food that I've ever tasted. And given that it's in one of the best locations in the world, the food tastes even better. So I think a lot of people don't expect it just because of the fact that they're in such a remote location that's so far away from anything, but sensational.
Wow, that's really cool.
Can be as diverse as necessary. I mean, all sorts of guest requests are dealt with. So anybody that has any dietary requirements or specific foods that they want to try, as long as they tell the company ahead of time, they usually cater for that.
Yeah. Mm. So it's an all-around really good unmuting your senses, sensory experience. The safari.
Exactly.
Very good. Well, this has been lovely.
Great. Yeah, it's been good to reconnect, and thanks so much for having me on this podcast.
You're welcome.
So that was the interesting and kind safari guide and wildlife photographer, Jacques Brim, who is a former schoolmate, can't say classmate, we didn't have any classes, but we did go to the same university in Madrid, so it's wonderful to follow up and see what wonderful things he's doing. And if you would like to know more about him, if you would like to buy some of his photos, if you want to check out Singita, the safari lodge and experience that he spoke about, go to the Lawganic, that's LawGanic.com website, and then go to podcast and listen, and then go to the page that has all of the links. So I hope that you enjoyed the show. If you did, I would be grateful for any sort of review on iTunes or sharing with friends or family so that we can all be more inspired to be in our natural beat. So in the meantime, continue to explore the world in your mind, body, and spirit. And may you continue to be in the tune of your natural beat. Until next time.